On today's episode of Born to Know, we dive deep into the most sought-after secret to beauty, longevity, and anti-aging, and you might be surprised by what it is. I'm joined by Gigi Vogel, the visionary founder of Della Heart, a brand that guides women on aligning their mind, body, and heart to accomplish beautiful transformation and health. In this episode, Gigi opens up about how she turned her life into the dream she had once envisioned so long ago, and why Bert Hellinger's words, "the one who remains in a victim attitude cannot transform," are at the core of her beautiful philosophy. We also explore how home birth, something she hadn't originally imagined for herself, shifted her perspective on life, and how embracing and alchemizing, rather than resisting the peaks and valleys of this life's journey, lead to the birth of an authentic, blissful, and fulfilled woman. This is an episode you won't want to miss. Gigi, thank you so much for being with me today. It's such a pleasure to hang out with you.
I'm very excited to be here.
I've been following the unfolding of Della Heart, your wellness brand. And something that I've always really admired about you is that you do your research. You are so committed to the quality, the consistency. And what I notice a lot of in the alternative health space, let's say, in my world of birth and biohacking and all of that, is that like people jump on something and then it's really hard to stay consistent with it, right? And I feel like everyone's kind of grasping at like something to help them feel better, help them, be more radiant, help them, you know, get to this place, but it feels like very piecemeal. And I feel like you've done this incredible job of curating what is a lifestyle that is accessible. So What would you say is like part of the process? Like, we have to unlearn old habits first, and then we have to kind of titrate in slowly to make these changes. Like, you know, this is a broad question, but it's like, I want to know, like, what's the secret sauce for being able to like unlearn and relearn?
Well, I think there's a combination, right? I thrive on structure and I thrive on consistency and I thrive on routine. So that is just something that is in me. And I have been like this since I was a little girl. Granted, I have done a lot of work to be able to realize the point where I drive and where the point that I thrive in. And this has been work, as you know, it has been a lot of spiritual work. It's been a lot of work with psychedelics. It's been a lot of work of going inwards and unlearning, bringing light to a lot of my shadows from my upbringing, what I was lacking, what I was receiving. Was it really helping me heal? Was it what I needed, right? Just being able to do that work allows you to land at a place of, okay, this is who I am. This is what I need. And this is what I want to do. And when I learned about wellness and in this whole like spiritual awakening, my path and my tools were wellness. And again, when I am in this well-being sense of well-being, when I feel great, when I look great, when I am feeling vibrant, that's when, again, I thrive. So that was kind of like my path to be able to connect both. And when I learned about lymphatic drainage and I saw what it did to my body, I saw what it did to my skin, I saw what it did to my hair, my overall health just improved significantly. I was like, wow, this is incredible. But it came with a heavy price tag that, you know, it's not accessible to everyone. It's not accessible to most people. And my mind immediately went back to when I was in that place where I want to take care of myself, where I want to feel great and I can't afford it. Like, how frustrating is that? So my mind were, okay, how do we give these tools to people so that they can have them in their beauty counter and they can experience this amazing feeling without the price tag? And that was kind of like the birth of that was like the purpose. Like, I just wanted everyone to be able to experience this feeling. And I started by modeling my personal life. So I opened up my doors to my bathroom, to my home, and I started showing that you can transform your life if you really want to feel and look and behave a certain way in order to achieve everything that you desire, everything that you dream of is there. You just have to tune in, fine tune within, and tune in to that vibration so that you can go get it, right? So because it's there, it's accessible. There's so much abundance in the world. And when I was able to do that, that's when everything kind of like came together and you have a purpose. You realize what you're good at. You realize what you're not good at. You realize what you need to do and you just do it. And it's that's when you have to go back to that discipline. Like more recently, I worked out this morning and it's like kind of cold in Miami. It's like the beginning of the year. I had a very loaded last year, which a lot of blessings, but a lot of hard work. So it's taken me a little to tap into that, like, let's go get it 2025. And I was talking to my trainer, who's a friend of mine. And she said, listen, there's no motivation that lasts forever, right? At this point, you're here working out with me out of discipline and consistency. Like, do you want to be here? No. Do you rather be drinking hot cocoa? Yes. But guess what? You're here. And because of you're here, you're going to start tapping into that energy that you need to get done everything that you need to do this year and tap into that new year, new me energy, right? So it's a combination of many different things. It's not just one thing. It's just doing a little work. And I think that the magic really happens where everything kind of like clicks.
Yeah. And it sounds like your journey started by doing internal work. Like there was a level of accountability. There was a recognition of, like you said, shadow, what's not serving me, what patterns have I been in that have maybe kept me safe but are not actually helping me expand, right? So there was a lot of acknowledgement and awareness for you to then focus on other things. I often find that to attain, you know, what you're saying, that radiance, that wellness, that flow state, we sometimes start with just curating the external world. We don't pay attention to that internal world because that's the harder. I feel like that's harder than waking. For me, that can be harder than waking up every day at 5 a.m. to to do physical activity, is that self-reflection. You know, it's not always glamorous, if ever, you know. And so it sounds like you started there and then created, you know, your brand and this experience where it's accessible for women. Do you have programs or coaching for how to step into that internal work, or that's just something you share with your audience about your own process?
No, I don't have programs. Maybe one day I will develop one, but I just feel that I am still in the process. I don't feel that I am at a place where I can say, okay, well, this is the secret sauce. This is how you do it, because you learn something every day. You unlearn something. You realize something new about yourself. I have a very strong meditation practice that really allows me to go within all the time. And I think, and from being in the wellness space for 12 years now, I think that the true longevity, the true beauty, the true anti-aging is when you're able to go within. And I've seen it, now I recognize it. I'm like, you know, when you see these women that you're like, oh my God, she doesn't age, right? It's usually a goddess. It's somebody that is so embodied, that is fully expressed, that has done everything that she desired, said everything, lived everything. And owns her space. And that's like when you see, you know, celebrities or just women in your community, you're like, oh my God, you look amazing. And it's this vibrancy that comes from within. So yes, sure, you can do all the things, the diet, whatever, that are outside, buy my products, all the stuff. But there is that radiance that comes from within, that it's an energy. And when you're able to connect both, that's when you achieve the bigger, greater things. But going deep is hard because, you know, most of us are afraid of what's in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say in every arena of our lives, there are trigger points, right? And like for me, in my career and in my work, like I'd say I never really go past like a level one trigger, like on a scale of 1 to 10, like nothing ever really gets me, you know, I'd say more. And then even in like parenting, you know, maybe it can get up to like a 3, 4 in personal relationship, might go, those triggers might go a little higher, right? And so, but that's taken work, because maybe 10 years ago, everything felt like it could be at a 10, you know? And so it is part of that journey in every area of our lives. We're being mirrored, you know, something is being mirrored back to us about, you know, that shadow, the stress response, and then these, you know, these resources that we may or may not have. Like, how do I downregulate my system when everything seems like it is falling apart or everything seems impossible, right? So it is a building of that muscle, so to speak, you know. In your meditation practice, it sounds like it takes you to a place of deep grounding that probably carries you through the day. And sometimes it's not a one trick pony. It's not like you do one retreat and then you're set for the next 6 months. It's a daily choice.
It's a daily choice. It's a daily practice that I really have to, you know, do I want to wake up at 5 a.m. every day? No, not every day. But the days that I don't do it, I'm a different person. I, you know, my trigger level is a lot shorter. I have a lot less space, and I see it with my children, right? The way that I react versus the way that I can hold space when I have created space for myself. When I have that 1 hour to really look at things and be like, okay, this is what I did yesterday. This is what I want to do. This is where I can be better. Receive messages and tune in to that energy where like, okay, I'm open to receiving and receiving that clarity. Like in the last 2 weeks, I had a few like loose ends things that I didn't know what to do. And I really had to slow down, and I woke up. I'm like, oh my God, I know what I need to do. I need to do it. So you receive that clarity by slowing down and really grounding yourself. That's where the clarity, you're open to that.
And that's, for me, that's almost a fine tuning of the feminine energy, is to be available to receive, to create enough safety in your environment and your system to be able to open up enough to receive downloads, information, ease. And then it makes a woman a better space holder, right? Because your cup has been filled, and it's like you're simultaneously receptive, but you're also resourced. So you can be there for your children. You can hold, you know, because you hold space for a very large audience of women, right? We don't realize like the audience that we hold on social media or following for a brand, it is a matter of holding space and being available to energetically give back and to pour into the women who are looking for research, support, education, whatever it is, you know? And so, you know, being in the, it's a combination of the masculine and the feminine energy. And if we're too hard in that kind of like boss babe, masculine, we get so worn down, burnt out. There's really, we're giving from an empty well. And so it's what I would call the feminine art of holding space, you know, is that commitment to self. So it's almost like putting yourself first, right? Because to wake up at 5 and to do this is for you. It's to fill your cup first, and all the other, you know, it's not just that, it's all the other practices that you do to nourish yourself, which takes me to that whole concept of self-care, right? Because I know so much of your brand is, they're tools for self-care, but again, women are like, okay, I'm going to do my red light mask, you know, once a day, and that's my self-care. But I'm like, no, it's almost hour by hour, right? Where it's like, okay, I've been sitting in this meeting for half an hour, or I've just gotten off this, you know, kind of draining phone call. What do I do now just to replenish myself for a few minutes, right? So what would you say, like, how do we redefine self-care, which I feel like is like a very overused term? Like, what are the energetic things we do? For me, boundaries are huge.
I think this whole self-care, it's kind of like the listen to your body. They're so widely and openly used and nobody really understands the depth or significance of those words. Self-care is it's not this routine that you do in the morning and you're like, oh my God, I just did my self-care. It's every, what you say, it's every moment. At every moment, you can choose to take care of yourself or not. Like, is this helping me thrive? Is this where I thrive? Is saying this, is me engaging with this person self-care? No, that's a boundary, right? And that's when you have to block that person on social media and you're like, no. Is me saying this thing, does it add value? And I ask myself all the time, I'm like, does this add value to myself, to my family, or to my brand? And if the answer is no, then I'm out. And I think that's my strictest form of self-care is taking care of my energy and my people. So if it's not adding value, I'm not going, right? Or I'm not being a part of it. And subsequently, then you have these pockets of time, and it doesn't have to be this like crazy. You don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. if that's depleting your bucket, right? Because then I get like, oh, but I can't wake up this early. I'm like, then don't. Oh, I would be miserable if I woke up this early. I'm like, great, that's your answer. You don't have to do it, right? If you are a person that thrives sleeping in, then honor that. And honoring yourself, oh, I could never take 20 supplements, then don't take them. Because stay true to yourself, because I do something, this is what is working for me. Like, there's a lot of things that other people do that are not, they don't make me reach the next level. So I think the self-care needs to be so individual. It needs to be very unstructured. It needs to be, you have to find pockets of time that fit in your life. So no, you don't have to do lymphatic drainage in the morning at 5 a.m. when you wake up. Do it when it feels true to you, when you can take that space and choose yourself. Sometimes it's maybe your kids are in school and at 10 a.m. you have free time. So that's your time for self-care. Maybe when you can make your own food at home after a long day of work, then that is your self-care. Or maybe pouring yourself a glass of wine and listening to your favorite song or your favorite album, that is your form of self-care. Because we all crave and need different things, and we're all in different levels of this journey. So you can't really compare to anyone else. And there are all these tools, but I think the real success of these tools is when you're able to incorporate them in a lifestyle that is your own, that you use them in your own way. And that's the only way that you can stay consistent. Because if you're going to do something that is unnatural to you, that doesn't feel good, that you feel forced to do, you're not going to do it. You know, it's like that New Year's resolution where you're like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym every day. Like, I hate a gym. Like, I walk into a gym and I get anxiety. I'm like, no. So I can't tell you that I'm going to do like all these weights. And now I'm getting older and I'm looking for that muscle longevity and building this bone density for my later age. But I'm doing it my way. I do it in my yoga studio. I bought myself a heavy kettlebell bell, and I do like the farm walks, and that's how I'm doing that part. So it doesn't have to look like anyone else. It just has to look and feel good for you, because the tools are out there. But if you're not able to make it your own, then you're not going to stay consistent.
You know, we can build resentment around a routine or an activity if it's not coming from within. I mean, this applies to so many things, right? When even in relationship where it's like your partner's like, if this doesn't happen, then, you know, kind of ultimatums, right? So it's like some people might jump to do that, but it's not authentically what they would select or elect to do for themselves. And then that's why the change doesn't stick. And so we have to find ways that we can modify it, that it works for us. And like you said, it's completely individual.
Yeah. And you even start resenting those people, because I get the pushback too from when you hold space for everyone, you're holding space. It's like, sometimes it's great and sometimes it's ugly. And, you know, my question is like, why does this activate you? Why do you feel this way? Oh, because, I'm in law school and I have two kids and I have a full-time job and I could never do this. And I'm like, then don't do it. You know, so it's just being able to hold that space for someone to find their own way and say, okay, I was like, listen, you know, I had a conversation recently and I said, just bring your clothes to law school and your gym clothes and get changed after your last class and just drive to the gym right away and do 30 minutes of cardio and start there. And she was like, I can do that. I'm like, okay. So that is your moment of self-care in the day. It doesn't have to look like me or somebody else's, right?
Yeah. And from what I know, the middle of the day or whatever it is the best time to go to the gym anyway, from what I've heard. Well, it's interesting you say that, because it's similar to doula work in a sense, because what doulas, I believe, should be doing is offering a permission field, right? As women, there's so much like, I want this, but I'm not sure if it's okay. I want this, but it feels selfish. I want this, but. So sometimes all it takes is a girlfriend, right? Or a space holder to say like, just try it this way, just like 20 minutes. Or what if you didn't go right today out of the driveway and you went left and went to do the other thing you wanted to do, you know? And sometimes it takes that space holder to give us, to expand our permission field, you know? And I think that's the beauty of women, you know, communing together or even being in connection. And what you said about the pushback is interesting, because sometimes it is like, yeah, that doesn't work for you, don't do it. But also what's behind the pushback, because there's a lot of juicy information when we resist something. Like there's a lot of potential for alchemy there. So I like to explore the resistance.
I love a pushback too. You know, like every time I get like a negative, I engage with everything, but there's sometimes that I'm like, I want to know why I'm activating this person. You know, what isn't? And then we end up becoming friends, because it wasn't personal. It wasn't, you know, it was just a roadblock on their end that I was just a mirror of. So then we end up being like besties.
Yeah, there's some alchemy that happened there where it's like, okay, I see you in your frustration. I'm not triggered by it. I'm curious.
I'm very curious. I've been in this for a long time now. And so like the trigger is gone. I'm like, okay, not you. I think everything that could have been said has already been said. So you become kind of like immune to it. And now I'm just curious. I'm like, where's that coming from? I want to know.
Yeah. And then she feels seen and then she's like relaxed, because often what we want when we push back on something is just to be seen and then perhaps given permission to express, you know? And so being given that platform can be really healing. And I know that when we worked together, we had overlapping friend groups, but we also worked together because I supported you in your pregnancy and in your birth as your doula. And I know that, I knew you were someone who did a lot of research and, you know, pays attention to detail. And so I loved that you had this arc of like, okay, I was maybe doing it this way, but I'm going to now explore this option. And there was some curiosity from your audience as to why you chose home birth, you know, as an option for your, and so I know you've talked about it on your platform a little bit, but I'm so curious to hear like, Was there something that inspired you, like a specific moment that inspired you to make a different decision? Because you have a very diverse audience of women when it comes, like, the spectrum of maybe more crunchy to more conventional, let's say, and everything in between. And so what was that moment that you, maybe if you can recall?
I think my audience is so, like, broad, because I myself am very broad, right? I can be very crunchy and, like, do ayahuasca in Peru for a week in the jungle and then come back and do Botox and put on the diamonds and, like, just live, right? And I have been able to own every version of me, right? Because for so long I struggled, like, well, but I also like this, but I also like that. And so it was this whole fight within me. And it wasn't until I actually had my second child, that I fully embraced every aspect of myself. And I allowed myself to just be and show who I really was, show all sides of me. And it was so freeing, and it's been so freeing. And for that reason, it attracts some people, resonate to different parts of me. And we have this very eclectic mix of women, which is fun, and men and everything in between. And it's been fun. And also, you know, the fact that I am constantly changing, and I am very open with people saying, like, listen, this is where I stand now, but this could change because I'm always learning. I feel differently. My needs are changing. I was vegan for 6 years. And after I had my son, my iron levels dropped dramatically. So now I eat meat, right? And my needs are changing. I'm getting older. My thoughts are changing. What I want, what I thought I wanted is very... So as long as you present yourself like that, in a very authentic way, like, I don't know it all. I'm just trying to, like, figure it out. And I'm here to hold space with you and show you. But don't hold me to that forever, because people want to put you in this box, right? Oh, she does natural birth and she's like this crunchy granola girl that walks around barefoot. No, not at all. Like, not at all. You don't have to be a certain way. And I think what really inspired me, like, the honest answer is that I'm terrified of hospitals. It's not a place that I feel safe, right? Like, the lights and the robes, it's never been, like, a happy place. Like, when I have to do a checkup, I like, I'm nervous, you know, I'm like sweating. It's not like my happy place. So that was kind of like the first thing that I was like, I don't see myself welcoming my child with these bright lights and these people that are just so conditioned to this react and this emergency. And I'm like, that is not the energy that I want to welcome my children in. But I didn't know anything else. And luckily, we had a lot of friends in common that had already worked with you, and we were together, friends, we were part of the same book club or whatever. And when you came to my house and you kind of like just started open this door to this whole field of information that to me was foreign to me up until that point. And obviously, you know, then I went deep. I went into like the dark side, and I just really understood at what point we shifted from home birth to hospital births, at what point the OB came in historically. And I love data. So I had all this data to go back to, and I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And, you know, my husband is a little bit more, he's very into the conventional, but he's very analytical, and the data was there. And I was like, listen, I'm not making this up. It's here. So he was fully on board. And it was just the best decision I would have done. And we were saying this earlier, I would have 100 children for that 1 hour of, you know, when you reach that point of that threshold where you can't go anymore and you're like, give me the meds. And then the baby's born and you have that golden hour where it's just pure bliss. It is the most pure moment of happiness and bliss. I think that everyone should know what that feels, because it is the best feeling in the world. Like, there's no best feeling of if you have that opportunity to have a baby and get to experience that. I don't think that you should walk away from that, because it is your gift. It's like, listen, this is so nice because the rest of the journey is really fucking hard. So enjoy this 1 hour, because after this, it only gets harder.
This is where the journey begins. I know, right? It's we focus so much on the birth being the challenge of the mothering journey, but it's really, like, as you know now, the moments after they're born, our whole reality changes, and we start looking at the world in a different way. We start planning things in a different way. We start relating in a different way. And then we have these little mirrors walking around, basically, who are like these masters teaching us about ourselves, about life. And I always love that perspective, that it's like, we don't come here to teach them our ways. They come here to show us new possibilities.
Yeah, because with them, there's this new version that is of you that is born as well. And you are fully changed. And I remember that when I had Shiva, my daughter, and then you guys were like, okay, we're leaving. I'm like, what do you mean you're leaving? What do I do now? Like, I have this creature here. Like, what? She's like, well, and you were like, well, maybe put a diaper, start by putting on a diaper and just, you'll know what to do. I was like, oh yeah, a diaper. Okay. Like, you really have no idea. And then you just, this supernatural force comes in you, and then you know all the things. And like, actually a few months ago, I was having a conversation with this person that was trying to tell me that my kid was some, like, a certain way. And I was like, listen, nobody knows more about this child than me. So no, you're wrong. And you fully own this mama bear.
Yeah. And it's in all of us. And I find that sometimes women second guess themselves with that, you know, which is, I know that you, again, with parenting, with what you expose your children to, who you expose them to, you know, concepts, like, you really trust in your inherent instincts to guide them. And I think that that's very often missing from a lot of women's reality because, you know, many, many reasons, socially, personally. I think as little girls, we're often taught, like, you know, to be this certain way for it to be good and right, you know, rather than what feels good inside of you. And so there's a reclamation process that earlier in our conversation, it sounds like you went through as you were building your brand. And that's something that I always wish to offer to women, is the possibility for reclamation of your instincts. What you just called, like, that supernatural that kicks in, it's like, it's in all of us, and we have to reclaim the preferences, the desires, the expressions. We have to reclaim, you know, vocalizing those needs and giving ourselves the permission to say, you know, I do know this child better than anyone else. I'm with them every day, and I trust their process, and I trust that we are doing the best we can, right? Rather than someone who doesn't know them, who's maybe, you know, met them once or twice at, like, an appointment of some kind, maybe, and they're saying, like, we see this, and it's like, okay, you know, I have the discernment to say, I know this is not the case. And it's kind of scary for some of us to say that.
Yeah. And you know, you do such a great job at holding that space and allowing a woman to not doubt herself. And, you know, like, I'm now kind of like taking myself back to those early conversations when I was like, but what if I can't do it? What if, like, what if I don't dilate on time? What if I go over the 12 hours? Or, you know, you have all these doubts, like, what if there's something wrong with the baby? And your answers were always like, your body knows what it needs to do. the baby's going to come out. Nothing's going to happen. The baby will be born. I've seen you work out. Like, you can do this. You know, your body will never, I will never forget this line. Your body will never give you more than you can handle. And it's true. It's so true. When people ask me, oh my God, you had a home birth. How did you handle that? I'm like, it's actually not so bad. Like, I had food poisoning last week. I'm like, this was harder than birthing kids. So it's this trust and this holding space for you to realize that you can do it, that you've been told that you can do it, but it's been done before over and over by women of all backgrounds. And the same applies to building the life that you desire and going after the things that you want. Like, you can, you've just been told or you believe that you can, but you know, if I can do it, I built a business out of a personal need to share, you know, and I built it as my kids were being born. My business started March of 2020 and my daughter was born March 1st of 2020. So, and how did I do it? You do it. You show up every day and, you know, some days you're really motivated and you want to take over the world. And other days, the discipline is going to take you there. But you always got to show up. And some days are harder. Sometimes I'm stressed. Sometimes the mom guilt takes over. Oh, my God, did I miss a lot of their work because I was doing X? You know, there's a trade-off. And I always say that you can do it all. But you can't do it alone and you can't do it at the same time. So if you're willing to accept that, then you just move through. And if you look back and you look back at 1 year or the last 5 years, you realize that you have done it all.
Yeah. And it's a matter of priorities, right? Because when we feel that overwhelm, there are always places where we could edit out things that are not adding value, like you said, to yourself, your business or your family or your personal relationships that matter. So those things that are not adding value, that, you know, they're fluff, right? And that's big for us this day and age, because we are constantly in contact with screens, social media, with a lot of things pulling our attention. And to have the discipline to not get into a space of, you know, becoming dopamine addicted with our screens, for example, like, that's a level of discipline. But that is one place where if we edit and have discipline around that, it actually allows these other things to expand and breathe and amplify. And sometimes people are like, oh, how does, you know, 30 minutes on the phone impact this? And I'm like, it does, because you become exhausted from that time when you're just mindlessly engaging, and you start to, you know, you don't realize your cortisol levels are even going up watching certain content, you know? And so if you were to eliminate that, what could you do with that 30 minutes? You could nourish yourself and you could then have more to give, you know, to your business if, you know, you don't have children, or to your children if you have, you know, right? So it's like a matter of really, you know, kind of getting honest with ourselves about where that energy, where the energy leaks are, I'd say.
Yeah. And editing, I really like that word, because I'm currently in an editing space, an editing process. If you want to go to the next level, if you want to go be able to go to the next step, then you have to really get honest with yourself and be like, you know, this mindless scrolling before bed is not adding value. This could be an extra hour that I could be sleeping, so I can have more energy and more clarity in the morning. And being honest with yourself and not getting carried away with battles that aren't yours, right? Like, you can be aware, you can have empathy, you can give back, you can help. But at some point, you got to draw a boundary of like, okay, this is not adding value to my life. And you have to stay kind of like in your lane and push through, because all these distractions are always pulling you from where your goals and they're always going to show up, right? So you kind of have to stay focused and be able to have that longer attention span that we're all lacking so much, right? Like, we ask for our children to like focus, but then you have your phone in your hand, you're driving, you know, it's like that model behavior. And ultimately, you know, that's what works.
Yeah, it's a level of stillness that you're talking about when, you know, we have that impulse to do the thing, right? To, you know, sometimes I see people open their phone and they just like open and close apps, but they didn't actually look at anything. You know, and I've certainly done that myself, right? But it's like, I've had to work really hard to stay conscious of that because I do use my phone for my business. You know, it's like, it's an extension and it's the way that things are flowing, you know, and one of my goals in the next 2 years is to downgrade from a smartphone so that I'm only doing my business from my computer. We'll see how that goes. But it's a level of stillness and it's a choice in every moment where that impulse comes and you just make a different decision. So what would you say, like, for a woman who is initiating her journey, you know, like initiating her journey into wanting to become more embodied, wanting to redefine what health means? Everyone has such a different idea of what that word means, right? Wellness, right? Like if a woman is like, okay, I'm ready to make a change. I don't know what it is, but I just want to feel better. I want to feel more vibrant. I want to expand into all my potential. Where can she begin?
You know, the work starts with the body. So the work starts with the external. So go and get a workout in. You know, go to Barry's boot camp, go for a 30-minute walk. I have seen, you know, my work started with the body. I was a runner. I was a runner in high school and college. And then when I graduated college, I kind of felt like lost because I didn't have that team to fall back on. So I started running marathons and half marathons. So I joined a running group, and I loved running because I was looking for that space that I can just now tune in, right? Many years later, I can sit down and move through different wavelengths and get there. But you know, that runner's high when you're like, you can run 10 miles because you're just going. I love that moment. So that was what I was chasing. I was chasing that space to go, be able to go within, and a blank space of that deep meditation, because it is a deep moving meditation. So the work starts with the body. Then you move into the mind. So in starting to connect the movement with some sort of mindfulness practice, because then, you know, you got to control the monkey mind, all these crazy thoughts. Oh, you're not good enough. Oh, you're too fat. Oh, you're this. Oh, no. Your daddy said this. Your mommy said that. You have to shut that down, shut that noise. And once you're able to have some control of that, because nobody can fully control the mind unless you're a monk or something, then you can go to the heart. And that's when you can start going in, and that's when you can start aligning. Then you align the heart and you can start going a little deeper and getting more into that spiritual practice where you're starting to live in this more embodied self. But start with the body, start with moving, start with shaking, wake up and like go bounce, jump up. You know, I do 300 jumping jacks. I don't want to say every day, I haven't been doing it every day, but I do at least 100, you know, like shake that energy, stagnant energy that stays in your body, emotions, just move. So start with the body. That's where it all starts.
Yeah, that feels accessible, right? Even like you said, if it's just you're starting and you're like, you feel overwhelmed, just start with a simple practice of 30 minutes walking, right? It's like, and if you can stick to that, you'll start to, I mean, even just after a few days, I know, like when I reset with something, just those first few days, I already noticed a difference in my sleep.
Yeah, because one thing leads to the next, like you started walking and now you're bored of walking. So you start running. So then you realize that you can't eat that heavy meal if you want to run for the full 45 minutes. So then you start looking at what you're eating. And then you're like, well, you know, now I'm running for an hour. I'm not going to go home and kill this burger or this pizza. Let me eat something that contributes to the work that I'm doing. So then naturally you start getting into changing the way you eat, and changing your choices start changing, And it just becomes this like natural pattern that you're kind of like finding for yourself, rather than, you know, doing that crash diet that, oh my God, like you're eating this or that, and then you do it for 2 weeks and you're done. So if you start in a place that, again, that feels authentic, feels good and looks good and works for your lifestyle and your goals, then it's so beautiful because you start finding yourself, and you just got to be open to it looking different and feeling different than what you think it was.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a runner for a long time, and then I realized that there was this level of like, I don't know, it felt like a very austere energy that I was having to recruit in order to keep doing it. And I said, I want pleasure. Like it doesn't feel pleasurable anymore. What would feel pleasurable but would offer me the same amount of movement, circulation, engagement? And I was like, oh, and that's when I found dance. And it was like a no-brainer for me. It felt so natural, and I would get excited to go. I never for a moment was like, oh, I gotta go. But I allowed for that evolution and the unfolding to happen, you know? And so if you get to that point where like, that doesn't feel like there's no pleasure there, then what is a different option? Because there's so many options. It could be swimming, it could be walking, it could be climbing a tree.
And also that's when you really have to listen to your body. Like I at one point my knees were hurting, my pelvis was out of place, my lower back was killing me. It was my body being like, okay, you got to find a new hobby because this is not sustainable. And that's exactly what I did. Then I walked into my first yoga class because I was in back pain. And I was like, okay, this is not going to work. This is so boring. What are these people wearing? What are they doing? So it wasn't love at first sight, but I kept going. Something or someone always kept bringing me back. You want to go to a yoga class? I was dating this guy, and he's like, you want to go to a yoga class? And I was like, not really, but you're kind of cute. Okay, yes, fine. You know? So I kept going back because it was my way. Like, I was meant to be there. And now it's my way, and I love it. And it gives me the challenge. And it's such a, you know, yoga is such an unlimited practice that there's never, yeah, you're never advanced, because even when you reach that advanced spot or that you thought, oh my God, I reached the peak pose, there's 5 other things that you can do that require you another 10 years of practice.
It's really such a metaphor for life.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I love it, because every time, you know, it's so humble. I always say it's so humbling when you think you're like, oh my God, I'm so good. Then you're like, oh, no, I'm not. It's the most humbling practice in the world. It can make you feel all the feels. You feel strong, you feel unstoppable, and then you can feel defeated. You can feel like so many things in just that one practice that it's like life, you know, like an entrepreneurship. Like, you know, in the morning, you're a hero, you just killed it, you made the news, you're in that Forbes article, and then in the afternoon, you run out of inventory and your sales are like plummeting and you're like, oh my God, I failed. I'm going out of business. This is it. So that's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a practice that for me, it brings humility, which brings us into a present moment of reflecting on all which we can do and all that which we do not know how to do yet. Then that brings, I mean, for me personally, into gratitude. It brings me into a deep state of gratitude, you know, and stillness. And so for me, that's always my goal, is where can I expand? Where can I be in tranquility and in gratitude? Because so much feels like it becomes available in that. For me, that's the flow state.
That's our Della Heart mantra. When you flow, you glow. When you have your lymphatic system is flowing and your energy is flowing and there's no stagnation and you're vibrant and you're light and you're detoxing and you're getting rid of what no longer serves you, both physically and energetically, then you're glowing. You have this innate glow to you. You're in the flow. You're going with the path of least resistance. And that's, you know, that's the vibration that we all need to or hope to be at.
Yeah. And you said the path of least resistance. I saw that come through so beautifully in both of your births. I felt that I witnessed that deep surrender. So it's like you were in the hard work, you were in labor land, and you were in also a deep state of surrender. And that's the flow state for birth, which, you know, for me, it's, I make it sound easy and it can be, but it takes that acknowledgement, that awareness, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, like home birth, it requires, when people ask me like, how did you do it? I'm like, well, you know, there's three things. There's, you're committed, right? Like you, by making this choice, you have this level of commitment that you're not at a hospital where you can say, you know what, just kidding. Just give it to me. I can't take it. So there's this level of commitment. You have to be willing to put in the work because you're going to feel all the feels. And physically, you go through a physical journey. But emotionally, I remember I told you, I said, oh my God, I feel like I'm in a journey right now. I went through my first labor was 17 hours. So I went through a full journey through my childhood. I had to like forgive my father. I was like, I'll do whatever at this point. This child just needs to be born, right? And then there was this surrender when, you know, I really wanted to do it. And I was like, guys, you know, like it's been 17 hours. I'm done. And that's when you guys are like, oh no, the head is here. We see the head. I was like, oh, okay. I guess I can do it. Let's do it. Right. But it's like that when you're just, I put in the work, I created this, and here, take it where you need to go. And a lot of what I see, because, you know, every time people always, this comes up, I see this need for women to control the experience. Oh, but I want to have a baby, but I want to have it after my vacation in the summer. And I need to be born a Sagittarius because, like, you know, they're the best zodiac sign.
I don't disagree. No,
I'm like, oh my God, this is, and then you wonder why you're not getting pregnant. It's like this level of control around an experience that you really have to fully surrender. Like there is no, whatever your path is, it all happens in a level of surrender. And it's very opposites from the going the natural birth route and even the natural approach to the rest of your life and your children's life. You have to release that control and surrender to like, okay, you know, a little turmeric is fine now, but if I think now it's time to go to the hospital, you know, like being okay with just putting your hands up and going whichever direction you need to go.
Yeah, that flexibility, that control comes through a lot, even when we have two children, right? Where one, it was done a certain way, they have a certain constitution and personality. And so we try to enforce a certain structure on the second one, and we're not flexible to the reality that they are a completely different human being functioning at a different rhythm. And to surrender to what they're showing us is really hard because we want to just have the same cookie cutter approach to both kids. And we can't do that, you know, and
we can't help it. And like I said earlier, you know, people, and we have this tendency to want to put people in a box, our kids in a box. Oh, this is the extrovert, this is the introvert. And this is the truth is that we should allow ourselves to be multidimensional, and then we should allow everyone around it, including our children, to be multidimensional as well. So they can embody and embrace every part of who they are.
Yeah, it's that permission field again. I saw something recently on Instagram where it's like this little girl doing this really funny dance. I know she must have been like 7 years old, and she was saying these funny things. And the dad said, this is a child who feels safe to be themselves, right? And it was so resonant for me because when an adult has to control those expressions, or, you know, the child is, you know, saying things that don't make sense to the parent, but you can tell that they're just in this, their own flow state. And the parent's like, that's weird. What are you talking about? Don't say that. Or, you know, reorganizing them. Then the child is getting the messaging like, oh, my expressions are not welcome here. And then what does that turn into? A kind of a shutting down of instinct, a shutting down of intuition and expression. And then we get to a place, you know, in adulthood where we have to unlearn that and say, it's okay, all parts of me are welcome here, you know? And that's some of the, you know, to reference earlier in our conversation, some of the more challenging work when we're on that wellness journey is allowing those, all of those parts to come online without shame and guilt, you know? But yeah, the conversation of control is so, birth is really the arena where this comes alive so much, and a woman really comes into contact with her tendency for control. And very often when they do the work, they realize, oh, this control has kept me safe for a very long time. And this is an opportunity to create safety, you know, be in a place where I feel good. You knew you didn't feel good in a hospital. You just knew that. That was kind of your launch point. So what do I do now to create the safety I need so that I can surrender? And some women, I tell them, they say, oh, I want to do a home birth. But after we talk, I'm like, it sounds to me like kind of a few arrows are pointing in the direction of the hospital, because you sound like more confident there, you know? And so be honest about that too, because you want to go where you feel really safe, and you can try the home birth. But if there's a subterranean layer still telling you, I should be at the hospital, that's really going to impact your experience, and we will most likely transfer.
Yeah. And again, that was something that you do so beautifully, like being able to, like, not in a not judgy way, just be like, I think you should just do what go to the hospital. Like that, I think that is your path. That is where you will feel your best. That's where, you know, and people, like, they ask me always for, they want to talk to me, oh, how was it? And I said, you know, I think this is not for everyone. It is not for everyone, and it's fine, you know, like, it's fine. And then there's other people that, you know, that my friend was like, I think I want to do it. I'm like, you should do it. I've seen you work out. You can totally do this.
Yeah. To be able to have that conversation and to, you know, not create any shame or guilt around choosing that, but really reflecting on our true desire. And I think that's just the key point here, is what would feel really good apart from what your mother-in-law would say, or what your, you know, audience would say, or what would feel really good. And it might be the hospital the first time, and it might be a home birth the second time. You know, we don't know, but we have to remain flexible and open to possibility and surrender. And
also, you know, I think now that I'm in, like, the mom scene, I see it with conception a lot, right? Where, like, you have, there's, again, going back to that control of how it needs to be or how it needs to look. And, oh, but I, you know, I want a girl, so I'm just going to go for the IVF. And or, like, no, I don't want the IVF, so I'm just not going to have kids. So it's like, you know, being in that, when it comes to this in particular, this is something that you really can't fully control, even though now we have some controllables, right? But I believe in that full surrender, because when I, you know, when my husband and I decided to have kids, I was very clear that I didn't know if I could have kids, you know, I'd never tried before. And I said, if for whatever reason I can't get pregnant naturally, I can live with that. And I will not go any other path. Are you okay with that? And, you know, he was like, this is your body, it's your choice ultimately. But he really wanted kids. I was more in a space where, like, if I'm meant to be a mother, they're going to come to me, they're going to find me. And I don't want them as bad that I want to go any other route. And then they came to me, right? So I was able to, but I had already come to terms with this acceptance of any way that was going to go. And I had made up my mind.
Yeah. And that that really comes into play too, even when women, you know, turn 30, for example, because they already start feeling like I haven't met the right partner yet. I need to freeze my eggs. What if I don't, you know, and it's like, because there is a whole industry that's like, you know, profiting off of that, call it existential fear, call it pain points, you know, whatever it is. And I, you know, women say, I don't want to go to those extreme measures. It's a financial investment. It's, you know, artificial hormones. It's painful. It's emotionally taxing. There's so much there. I'm like, okay, well, what if you surrender to the possibility that it'll come at the time that it's meant to, you know?
But how hard is that? And that's something that, you know, I see it a lot. It's like not an option. And, you know, for me, that was the first option, right? It was this is what I will do and I can accept this. But that first option is not an option for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I always say also, we mentioned this with yoga, but also how we birth is how we live too, you know, and how we approach that. And it's a really beautiful combination of inspired action and surrender. And you're just in that give and take. And so when people ask me, what do I do to prepare for this experience? I'm like, can we get to a place of inspired action and surrender where you do your due diligence and you also allow the unfolding that you don't have control over?
I love that. I love that inspire action and surrender, because that is, you know, the pull and push through life. You know, the more that I get older and the more I live and the more I experience, that's it. You work super hard, you put in the work, and then that.
So beautiful. Thank you for hanging out with me.
Thank you for having me. We can talk for hours. I said this is going to be hard to do in an hour, but there's so many, you know, little legs to this, because it's all like how you birth is how you live. And, you know, having had the opportunity to birth twice with you and Dana, it's just, you know, like I'm just, so many things can go back to, you know, that was like a full reflection of who I have worked so hard to become, right? Allowing that surrender, putting in the work, getting to know different sides of me and learning to live in that conventional and natural world and how they can both coexist so beautifully and not having to go one way or the other and just, you know, creating a space that is unique to me and that not judging anyone that goes in a different direction, including myself, right? Not judging myself when I do want to reach for that Tylenol and not judging myself for, you know, sitting out X or Y. So thank you. Thank you for holding that space. And you do such a beautiful work with so many women. Just this education that you do and your whole program, and you have the best like job in the world, because you get to experience that golden hour, and that's why you look so beautiful, because you just, this oxytocin is what has you looking like you're 25 forever.
Oh my goodness. I know. I was at a birth, my stepdaughter recently, and you know, she had her third baby, and I was just like, I was telling my friends, they said, you're glowing. I said, I've just been holding a newborn for 4 days and smelling him and looking into his eyes and hearing his breath. And I am just like, you know, it's,
yeah, you're high.
You're high. Yeah, that's what it is. You're high. And like, you know, it's really such a, I feel very blessed and fortunate to be able to be in this space. And so how can people find you and connect with you?
You can find me on Instagram. My personal account is @GigiVogel_. You can also find my brand, wellness and skincare, all natural, effective, approachable. and at Della Hart, also on Instagram, DellaHart.com. We have all the tutorials and just a really beautiful sync of lifestyle, wellness, beauty, and a little sprinkles of the whole ecosystem to feeling and living your best life.
I love it. Thank you so much, Gigi.
Thank you.